Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'm about to shine the spotlight on Pope Benedict XVI's apostolic visit to Lebanon, where he has called for peace in the region. Symbolically planted a sapling Lebanese cedar, the national symbol of this country, and has been received warmly by the crowds lining the streets, some of whom, in a welcoming gesture, even strewed rose petals and threw rice on the Popemobile as a sign of celebration. Well, thanks so much for joining me. The Holy Father's pastoral visit to Lebanon began on Friday, 14th of September. On the afternoon of his first day in Beirut, in the course of a ceremony in the stunning hilltop Greek Melkite Basilica of St. Paul in Harissa, he signed a document which goes by the title of Post-Synodal Apostolic Exhortation, by the Latin title of Ecclesia in Medio Oriente. As the title indicates, it's intended for the entire Middle Eastern region. No surprise, as it represents the result of the Special Assembly for the Middle East of the Synod of Bishops. For more details on this document, in which he calls for religious freedom in the Middle East, be sure to check our website at radiovaticana.org, where you can find the full text as well as a summary of this document. But let's begin the broadcast with the latest news from the Maronite Patriarch of Berke. That's to say, the evening meeting with future generations, the young people, who once again were not just from Lebanon, but had come to meet with the Pope from the entire Middle Eastern region. Tracy McClure is on the ground there and filed this report.
It was a party atmosphere that greeted Pope Benedict with song and a rainbow of colors in choreographed dance. With a gigantic rosary made of blue and yellow balloons floating across the sky under the sign of Our Lady, the square outside the Maronite Patriarchal residence was full to brimming with young people from across Lebanon. So full that the Lebanese themselves were surprised. Many were waiting to see what the security situation would be like before deciding to come. Some didn't care about that at all, crossing over the border from war-torn Syria. One young girl saying she hadn't fled the country but come here on purpose to bring the Holy Father's prayers for peace back to her suffering home. And they came too from the Holy Land, Syria, Iraq, Kurdistan, Jordan, Europe, the Americas, and Australia, from across every continent, to celebrate the peace that Pope Benedict wants to share in a suffering world. And they weren't just Christians either. At least 1,000 Muslims came, many singing in mixed faith choirs. And the flags were everywhere. One young woman remarked this papal visit is the first time she'd seen the Lebanese, noted for their clannish alliances, all united under the national Lebanese flag. One flag flying alongside the flag of a foreign state, the Holy See. That's never happened before, she said. People usually bring out a myriad of local political flags instead. Well, in the run-up to the Holy Father's arrival, young people shouted out the refrain, "Jesus is my joy," and continued to repeat it on and on, even if wars continue against you, even if you suffer, and even if your enemy continues to torture you, "Jesus is my joy." All here enjoy, in fact, to hear Pope Benedict's "Salami o tecum," "My peace I give you."
Salami o tecum. No dire Christ.
Now Tracy has given us a little bit of background on this meeting, why not find out more about the speech he delivered on this occasion, the third of this visit. For this, we join Sean Patrick Lovett.
Whenever the Pope meets with young people anywhere in the world, there are two words that recur constantly in his discourses, because they're the two words we associate most with youth, hope, and the future. Speaking in Lebanon, these words echoed with special significance and strength, spoken as they were in the context of the violence and upheaval that's currently shaking the Middle East and the world, and even more so because they were addressed to Christians and Muslims alike. In fact, everything the Pope said to the young people, who represented their peers throughout the region, stood in stark contrast to the images and news reports simultaneously flashing across our screens. Not only did he invite them to be peacemakers, he urged them to resist everything opposed to life, abortion, violence, contempt, injustice, and war. Not only did he encourage them to seek beauty and strive for goodness, he praised their enthusiasm and creativity and reminded them that Islam and Christianity can live side by side without hatred, with respect for the beliefs of each person, so as to build together a free and humane society. At the same time, Benedict XVI told the young people he is aware of their frustrations and difficulties and the serious challenges they face because of the lack of security and the unemployment in this part of the world. Still, he reminded them, it's here that Jesus was born and that Christianity grew. Not even unemployment and uncertainty should lead you to taste the bitter sweetness of emigration, he said. You are meant to be protagonists of your country's future. Speaking to the young people, it was as though the Pope was addressing the whole of the Middle East at this particularly dramatic time. Be completely open to others, even if they belong to a different cultural, religious, or national group, he said. Respect them, be good to them. This is the true revolution of love. But the paragraph likely to get most visibility across the world is the penultimate one, in which the Pope addresses young people present from Syria. He speaks of how much he admires their courage and adds, "Tell your families and friends back home that the Pope has not forgotten you, that he's saddened by your sufferings and grief." Then Benedict XVI, in an unequivocal appeal to the entire world, concludes, "It is time for Muslims and Christians to come together so as to put an end to violence and war." I'm Sean Patrick Lovett.
And having listened to Sean Patrick Lovett there, telling us all about Pope Benedict XVI's third speech of the visit, the one to young people, we now join Tracy McClure once again as she reports on the Pope's courtesy visit to the President of Lebanon, Michel Sleiman, on the morning of Saturday, 15th of September, at the Baabda Presidential Palace, where representatives of the parliamentary, governmental, institutional and political authorities of this Middle Eastern region had also gathered.
This is a country in festival. Tens of thousands of flag-waving Lebanese lined the streets north of Beirut to see the Pope driving by in the Pope-mobile. And on the final stretch up to the presidential palace, an equestrian parade, traditional Lebanese dancers and maidens throwing rice to celebrate the Pope's arrival. In the gardens of the presidential palace, with Lebanon's Christian president Michel Sleiman, Pope Benedict planted a sapling Lebanese cedar, the national symbol of this country, and a symbol we'll see as a backdrop to Sunday's big outdoor mass on the Beirut waterfront. The president called Friday's meeting historically important, coming at a decisive moment for the region, describing Lebanon as a land where coexistence is not imposed on the population but is part of the Lebanese identity. The president offered it as a prototype for others to emulate. In his discourse, Pope Benedict drew on the image of the cedar.
Avec vous, je viens de planter un cèdre du Liban.
As embodying the hopes of the Lebanese people and all the peoples of the Middle East, whose region, he said, seems to endure interminable birth pangs. And like the cedar, this region requires care to grow to fullness. He called mankind one great family that we're all responsible for.
C'est une grande famille. Nous sommes tous responsables.
Peace, society, human dignity, the family, dialogue, and solidarity, he affirmed, form the core of coexistence and peace. And these turbulent lands can become an example to the world that peace and reconciliation are possible. The first school of peace, the Pope said, is found in the family. And if we fail to defend life, how can we not reject war, terrorism, and assaults on innocent life? The destruction of a single human life, the Pope said, is a loss for humanity as a whole.
La perte de chaque vie humaine est une perte pour l'humanité entière.
Some ideologies undermine the foundations of society, the Pope charged, by directly or indirectly questioning the inalienable value of each person and the family. We need to be conscious of these attacks on our efforts to build harmonious coexistence, the Pope said, and challenge them by acting in solidarity with others. That means peace needs to be taught at every level, from the home to schools, churches and mosques, and the places of power. Peace, therefore, must be in our thoughts, words and acts. Calling people to a conversion of hearts and the rediscovery of the profound meaning of justice and common good, the Pope said evil, the devil, works through human freedom and distorts love of neighbor, yielding to falsehood, envy, hatred, and death. Rejecting revenge, acknowledging one's faults, accepting apologies and forgiveness may be quite demanding, the Pope acknowledged, but only forgiveness can lay lasting foundations for reconciliation and universal peace.
Car seul le pardon donné et reçu pose les fondements durables de la réconciliation et de la paix pour tous.
Describing armed conflict and war in some places as full of futility and horror, the Pope noted that other countries also suffer from assaults on the integrity and lives of people, such as unemployment, poverty, corruption, addiction, exploitation, trafficking, and terrorism, which not only cause unacceptable suffering, but also drain human potential. Society must also beware of the risk of being enslaved by an economic and financial mindset, he said, which subordinate being to having. And in Lebanon, home to 18 different faith communities, the Pope said Christianity and Islam have lived side by side for centuries.
Au Liban, la chrétienté et l'islam habitent. It
is not uncommon, he said, to find the two religions within the same family. If this is possible, the Pope asked, why should it not be possible at the level of the whole of society? Noting the centuries-old mix of cultures in the Middle East, the Pope lamented the fact that it was also sadly true that they have fought one another. A pluralistic society can only exist on the basis of mutual respect, he said. The desire to know the other and continuous dialogue. And for such dialogue to take place, people must be conscious of the values of all great cultures share, because they are rooted in the human person. Calling religious freedom the basic right on which many other rights depend, the Holy Father said the freedom to profess and practice one's religion without danger to life and liberty must be possible to everyone. In concluding, the Holy Father said all these reflections can and must be lived out. In this context, Lebanon, he stressed, is called now more than ever to be an example. And he called here on politicians, diplomats, religious leaders, and society to testify with courage that God wants peace and is entrusting it to all of us.
Politique, diplomate, religieux. Hommes et femmes du monde et de la culture, je vous invite donc à témoigner avec courage, à temps et à contre-temps, autour de vous, que Dieu veut la paix, que Dieu nous confie la paix. Salem et oticum, nous dit le Christ. Que Dieu vous bénisse. Merci.
In Lebanon with Pope Benedict, I'm Tracy McClure.
Shortly after this meeting, Tracy met with the director of the Holy See's press office, Father Federico Lombardi, in an effort to get his impressions of this meeting.
Father, you have called Saturday's meeting at the Lebanese Presidential Palace a significant moment on this papal trip. What stood out the most for you?
Several aspects. Obviously, the speech of the Pope about the peace is a fundamental moment because it is a speech not only for Lebanon but for the entire Middle East. And at the end, talking with the President of the Parliament, he said to me, all the people, all the politicians of Middle East have to receive and to read and to meditate this speech of the Pope. In this sense, I think it's a profound speech that helps to see the foundations of work for the peace, not only the top, but the foundation that is typical of the method of Ratzinger, I think. It was also very important, the moment of the meeting with the four heads of the religious Muslim communities here in Lebanon.
And these were all, of course, private meetings before the official discourses.
Yes, this was private, but it was the interreligious moment of this trip. There were four important personalities of the Muslim world, four representatives of the delegation of the Holy See, and the Pope, a friendly conversation. And the Mufti has said, I think that for me is one of the most important that we can hear from him, that is, the Muslim people will that the Christian remain in Middle East and in Lebanon because they know very well that a Middle East without Christian will be a poorer land because the Christian bring a contribution, religious, historical, cultural, very important for the richness of these lands. And this is a sign of hope, I think. If really the most important personality of the Muslim are convinced that we have to be together in a positive way, that we have a mutual contribution to give for a common construction, we are on the right way.
And again, we heard both the President and the Pope lift up Lebanon as an example of coexistence, that same sort of message that Pope John Paul II spoke of so many years ago.
Yes, this is clear. This is a particular situation, Lebanon in Middle East, with its composition, with these different communities, and this pact that found this coexistence here in the land. Obviously, this is a message, but this is also a mission. This is something that is not done once forever. It is something that has to be done again, built again every day. We have seen how many risks there are in this sense. And therefore, to repeat this is to say we have to do our effort in this direction.
It seems that Lebanon's political leaders themselves really wanted this trip.
Obviously, this trip is absolutely helpful for the peace and the coexistence in the land. And it is very interesting to see in these days how all the composants of the land agree in a wonderful reception of the Pope, really heartily. They understand that the Pope helps the peace.
Finally, Pope Benedict is meeting the patriarchs and bishops of different Eastern Catholic rites on this visit. Of course, he's handing them the post-synodal exhortation as a roadmap for the future of Christians here. Relations between these different rites sometimes have known periods of tensions. What does the Pope have to say now to the patriarchs and bishops?
This is obvious. If the exhortation says communion, we have to be a communion to give a good witness of the love of Christ in our world, then we have to be united. Or every division, every concurrency, every indifference among the Christian communities is terrible loss of credibility. And then in this sense, he will urge all the Christian communities, the rites in the Catholic Church and in the Christian churches, to demonstrate that the differences are richness of different traditions that are complementary, but they have to give the same witness of the love of Christ and of the love of God for all the men of our world.
And now we've listened to Father Federico Lombardi, the director of the Holy See's press office, speaking to Tracy McClure. What I'd like to do is talk to you about patriarchs. For on Saturday morning, Pope Benedict called at the Armenian Catholic Patriarchate of Zomar, where he lunched with the patriarchs and bishops of Lebanon and the members of the Special Council for the Middle East of the Synod of Bishops. In particular, I'd like you to listen to Tracy McClure's interview with the Armenian Catholic Patriarch, Nersis Bedros, who tells her how the continuing emigration of Christians from the Middle East is a disaster.
What do you see as some of the greatest challenges to Christians in the Middle East today?
There are many challenges facing Christians in the Middle East today. Some of them are also common for non-Christian people. First of all, the lack of political security has a very bad influence on the country's economic life. The rate of unemployment is increasing daily, which is leading to corruption, stealing, and murder. And this situation became more complicated by the arrival of Syrian refugees to Lebanon. There are no future plans or a clear vision to improve the economic situation of the families, and especially the youth, which is causing a continuous wave of immigration that we call brains exodus, because those immigrants are the most talented and educated people. With the number of Christians diminishing in our countries, and especially the well-educated Christians, the witness of the gospel is partly losing its effects. That is why the immigration of Christians from the Middle East is a disaster, not only because they leave their fatherly land and the countries of our first Christian communities, but also because of the lack of Christian presence to give to the non-Christians the real image of the true Christian life and testimony of the joy to be Christians.
And you were listening there to Tracy McClure interviewing the Armenian Catholic Patriarch Nerses Bedros. We've just mentioned the Armenian Patriarchate, but there are another four patriarchates in Beirut. They are Maronite, Greek Melkite, Chaldean, Syriac, and Latin. But what exactly is their jurisdiction? That's the question Tracy McClure put to John Paul Kimes, a Maronite priest who's currently working as an official at the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Father Kynes is an expert in canon law and the Eastern rites and liturgical traditions in the Catholic Church. Stay tuned.
The issue of patriarchal jurisdiction has been an ongoing debate, if you will, particularly in canon law circles in the church, and not to bore anyone with sort of academic arguments, but the real distinction is that in the Catholic tradition, to date, the only bishop who enjoys universal jurisdiction is the Pope, the Bishop of Rome. Mm-hmm. The patriarchs of the Eastern Catholic Churches collectively have seen their numbers in their traditional territories dwindle for reasons of persecution, whether that be economic persecution, physical persecution, religious persecution. All of the Christians in the Middle East now every day face the debate of whether they can stay in their homes and continue to worship their God, or whether they will be forced to leave to find a different life somewhere else. And this is a tragic reality that the churches in the Middle East are collectively trying to address. The jurisdictional issue was addressed particularly in 1990 with the promulgation of a code of canon law for the Eastern Catholic Churches, which states clearly that the patriarchs have a form of universal jurisdiction in that it is the patriarchs and the synods of bishops of the Eastern Churches that promulgate liturgical texts. The patriarch has the ability to celebrate the sacraments in his church all around the world. But his technical jurisdiction, his legal jurisdiction, in a universal sense, extends only to the traditional territory of the patriarchate. This is the recognition of a historical reality, that a patriarch never enjoyed universal jurisdiction, only the Bishop of Rome. So the desire of the patriarchs now is to find a balance where they can continue to offer spiritual and sacramental aid and support to their faithful who are no longer in their traditional territories and maintain some form of jurisdiction around them. Now, the way the church promotes this is through the creation of eparchies. And eparchies are just dioceses for Eastern Catholic churches. They're both a diocese and an eparchy are the same thing. The Eastern Catholic churches use the name eparchy, whereas the Latin church uses the name diocese. So the patriarch and the synod can establish new eparchies throughout the world and then appoint bishops who would then have local jurisdiction over the parishes that are established in that area and the faithful who are not close to a parish as well. The bishop would also enjoy jurisdiction over them. So it's the establishment of eparchies around the world, the naming of local bishops, and then the establishment of local parishes.
Okay, but that was available for them before the synod.
Absolutely.
So what changes with the synod?
In technical terms, nothing. This is a question that has been open for years, and that the patriarchs and the bishops in the Middle East have pushed for it in the synod is a natural extension of a dialogue that has been going on for at least the past 25 years, if not more. So this is just another stage in the dialogue of an expression of the patriarch's concern over the care of their faithful with the Bishop of Rome, with the Holy Father, to try and find some way to balance the unique universal jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome with a real pastoral need on the part of the patriarchs of the Eastern Catholic churches. And again, it's a dialogue that's ongoing and who knows when a solution will actually come.
Within the Vatican structure, then, where would change need to come from? From the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith? From legislative texts? Where would that...
The change would have to come from the Holy Father himself. Mm-hmm. The Holy Father is the supreme legislator in the Catholic Church, and it is currently the legislation of the Catholic Church does not permit the sort of jurisdiction that the patriarchs are asking for. So the most immediate way to change it would be through a legislative act of the Holy Father himself. So it would not necessarily go through a Vatican dicaster. It wouldn't have to go through the Congregation for Eastern Churches. This would be a natural office where this debate would take place, since they have the most knowledge of the Eastern Catholic Churches. In consultation, one would imagine, with the Pontifical Council for Legislative Texts. But again, since it is a canonical issue, ultimately it would be an act of the Holy Father in his role as supreme legislator. Mm-hmm. There have been different points in this dialogue where the patriarchs have raised the question, and raised the question with different levels of intensity. And the Holy See has responded on different occasions, also with different levels of intensity. There was a very famous intervention during an anniversary conference on the promulgation for the Code of Canons for the Eastern Churches, in which the Holy See said definitively, or so it was thought, that this issue was not to be raised again. So again, this is, as I said, it's been a dialogue that's ongoing. It's not always been the most pleasant of dialogues, because both sides have very legitimate concerns and both sides are passionate about their concerns. But it's always done in this fraternal community of the patriarchs of the Holy Father. So whether it's included, whether this issue is included in the final apostolic exhortation on the synod or not, it is most certain that the debate will continue.
And you were listening there to Father John Paul Kimes, who is currently working as an official at the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening. Laudetur Jesus Christus.